latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organisations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. ACB Radio.
When you've got a whole lot of the children's friends over, that's the thing to do. Get them into the studio and have some fun. It's one of the many joys of parenting. Welcome to Blindline. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it's a pleasure to have you along. And on the program today, in just a moment, we're going to be speaking about being a blind parent. There are many, many, many good points about being a parent. There are also challenges about being a parent who happens to be blind. Some of those challenges are logistical ones. How do you do a certain task when you can't see? Sadly, though, others of those challenges are attitudinal. And we'll be talking about both of those sorts of challenges on the program today. And what will really make this program work is if you share your experiences with us on the how-tos and perhaps some of the discriminatory elements that you've dealt with successfully. How have you overcome them? How have you convinced the parents of your children's friends, teachers, other professionals that you are a competent parent? And isn't it a sad reflection on society that you even have to do any of that convincing? Let me introduce you to our guest, and the phones are open straight away if you'd like to call us on this topic, courtesy of spiderphone.com. You can do that by calling the usual number, and that's in the title bar of your media player at the moment. The number is area code 212 in the United States, 812-2800. That's in the US, area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a PIN, you should enter 0480-5512. Thanks to Spiderphone for giving us these facilities. That PIN, again, once you're through, is 0480-5512. My guest is someone who is certainly a prominent name around the blind community on the internet, and if we get a chance, we'll talk about some of the other things that she's involved with as well. But she's also one of the co-moderators of the Blind Parents email group, which currently resides on Topica, and that's Amy Rule. Amy, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. You've called in from time to time, and I've wanted you to have to be a guest for some time, so welcome to Timeline.
Thanks, Jonathan. Nice to be here.
And Amy's on internet telephony, so we're going to have some really nice fun delays, but that's okay because we'll get through that. Amy, let's talk first about the Blind Parents email group. And how long has that been going, and how did it get started?
Well, I'm going to have to plead some ignorance on part of your question. I was not one of the originators of the blind parent list. There were actually two initially, one on eGroups and one on OneList. And those groups eventually merged. I think the current list has been going on well over a year now. But I couldn't exactly tell you the month it started. I think probably because I have too much of a crazy life and I'm on too many lists. I can't keep track of that. But I was initially just a member of the list, and then Mark Sank, who started one of the lists because somebody had asked for it and he knew how to start a mailing list, asked for to come on and assist him because he's not himself a blind parent. So I stepped in to fulfill that role, and that's how I came to be one of the moderators of the list.
So how old are your children?
I have two children, two wonderful children who luckily this evening are being quite cooperative and quiet after much pleading from me. I have a son, Stephen, who's 13 and in 8th grade, and a daughter, Sheila, who's 10.
Right, so you're just heading into the whole terrible teen thing, right? You've got a whole new set of experiences to look forward to.
I think we're there. I'm not even sure we're headed anymore. Well, we're maybe headed with Sheila, but we're definitely there with Stephen.
You know, let's start at the very beginning, because there is even a lot of criticism leveled at blind people in some instances, particularly when congenital blindness is involved, for having the audacity to have children at all. That is, I guess, one of the first areas of contention that a blind person may come up against, even the decision about whether it's the right thing to do to have blind to have children, if, particularly if you know that there's a very good chance that the child is going to be blind.
I think that's true, and we've had several members on the list who've talked about that. My own situation is that I am blind secondary to ROP, which used to be called RLS, retinopathy of prematurity, and so I didn't have to face the challenge of potentially having a child who would be blind as well. But I can say that I think, given the very divergent reactions that many of us experience when we tell other people, even people within our own families, that we are planning to have children, I think it's pretty clear that there is a lot of shock and concern and, in some quarters, dismay and disapproval about that.
So there are two issues, really. One is the whole question of passing on blindness, but then the other question is general lack of acceptance that a blind parent can be a competent parent, irrespective of whether the child's going to be blind or sighted. And did you come across people who wondered what on earth you were up to having children because you were blind?
I didn't hear that openly expressed. I think there were subtle indications. There were some members of my own family who did not greet the news with the joy that I might have anticipated, to be honest, and I don't think that's an unusual experience. There also were people who, I think, hesitated somewhat and didn't ask what I presume they were thinking, and in some cases they acknowledged they were thinking after the fact, which was, how in heavens are you going to do this?
In terms of, you know, coping with a toddler, for example, knowing what he or she is getting into, all of those kind of logistical questions.
Those seem to be the questions that people come up with most easily, the how-to questions, particularly with babies and toddlers. I think, I don't think that many people, sighted people, at least not in my experience, think down the road in terms of the other challenges that we face, and but find it easy to think about those situations in which they would find sight invaluable and necessary, because they have a hard time thinking beyond their own experience.
We have a call on the board, so we'll take that and make sure they don't incur too many long-distance charges. We say very good evening to area code 510. Welcome to Blindline. Well, that's fine. What happened to area code 510, I wonder? They seem to have gone.
I don't know where area code 510 is.
Did I cut? I could have told you that, but I think, well, if I cut them off, I apologize, or maybe they hang up. Sight is such a dominant sense, isn't it, that I suppose when you have it, it's natural that you're sight-dependent. When you don't, so it's hard to imagine how someone who doesn't have sight is going to do something as responsible as being a parent. I think the thing that occurs to me about parenting is it's probably the most responsible job you can have in the whole world. You know, I think it's to actually be in charge, if you like, of shaping another human being's moral and environmental surroundings, all of those things, and yet there's no training for it, no real qualifications required apart from functioning organs, and it's such a responsible job, and I suppose that some people who understand that just don't see how a blind person can do that. And I suppose it's even more difficult for blind women, because I suppose that in traditional society they are seen as the primary caregivers of children.
I think that's very true. I think it's probably one of them, it's certainly the most rewarding job I've ever done. It's probably the most difficult job I've ever done. And I think that there are times when I myself wonder somehow how I'm going to do certain things. So I don't think that even we as blind people are immune to questions about how we're going to manage. I think the difference is that for most of us, we say we will manage. We may not know exactly how we're going to do it, but we'll find a way. Whereas I think for many, and certainly not all sighted people, but for many sighted people, the presumption is that it's going to be A, more difficult, and or B, perhaps impossible, that we can do it well and as competently as our sighted counterpart.
I met a blind woman who said that when she was pregnant and was with a volunteer at the supermarket getting some shopping, somebody came up to her, obviously deciding that blind people wouldn't possibly be in a regular, normal relationship, and that who would want to marry and live with a blind woman, etc., etc., and actually came up to this woman and said, "Oh, you poor thing, who did that to you?"
Oh, my. I'm not surprised that that has happened. I must say I didn't have that experience myself, but sadly I'm not surprised that happened. I have, however, my husband happens to be excited, and I do have to tell you that I've had more than one person on a subway or in a store say to me as I was, you know, going places with my children, "Is your husband sighted?" And when I answer in the affirmative, they say, "Oh, well, that's good." You know, as if somehow that there's an extra protection there that he's, because he's sighted, even though he's not with us, you know, isn't on the subway, isn't in the store getting groceries, etc.
Are there things, though, that you can't do as a parent because of your blindness that you expect that most sighted mums are doing?
Certainly there are. And there are probably some things that I, as a parent, can't do, irrespective of my blindness, because of my own limitations. But I would certainly, for example, one of the biggest challenges I face, and as my children get older, and this was a hot topic on the blind parent list for a while, is transportation. I don't happen to live in a place where there is good transportation within my community. And so, you know, I cannot as easily get my children from place to place. I don't have, it is a logistical nightmare at times for me to try to ensure that they get to all of their activities. I'm not going to be able to go, when I go to the basketball, to the gym for a basketball game or to the gym for my daughter's gymnastics meet, I'm not going to be able to understand completely all of the things that are going on and exactly what my children are doing. Certainly there are things that I can't do. I'm not going to be the best person to discuss color coordination with them because I don't have any sense of color. I've never seen color. Those are just a couple of examples I can think of. Yes, there are certainly some things.
I've got, as you know, children who are all under five, and I know that they come out in the morning sometimes deciding to be all independent and dressing themselves with some hideous colour combinations. In your case, is that something that your husband sorts out, or are you so meticulous that you absolutely know by feel what your kids are wearing and the combination of what they're wearing is inappropriate?
When they were younger, and when I worked a different schedule, because work outside, I have two jobs, I work outside the home, plus I have a small internet business, and I'm also the president of my computer group and do a lot of other things. Before I got so busy when my children were younger, I really did match up their clothing myself, and I could tell because I knew that the turtleneck with the rough texture and the collar that was folded a certain way went with the overalls with the snaps in the front, etc. Now, that's something that although I could do it and I know I could do it, I've not. We have a a division of labor in our household, and now my children sort the laundry so that we don't mix the wrong colors together when we wash it. And my husband takes the primary role of assisting them with making sure that when we purchase clothes or when the clothes are hung up in the closet that we match them up. And, of course, when the kids get to be my children's age, you can't tell them what to wear anyhow.
Yeah, no. when your first child was born, did reality hit you, or did you feel fully prepared for what was... Well, I don't know if any parent really feels fully prepared when number one arrives, do they?
No, that's what I was going to say. I don't think anybody's ever fully prepared. If anyone who says that they are prepared has never had a child, at least in my ever to be so humble opinion. I don't think I was fully prepared. I knew that there were things I wasn't clear about how I was going to do. I also need to preface this by saying a couple of things. I was not a person who was terribly experienced with babies. I am the youngest in my family of origin, and I had done some babysitting, but I, you know, wasn't terribly experienced with babies, so I had a lot to learn. And I also, because up until very recently, I haven't really been very involved within the blind community. I didn't have any role models to speak of for blind. So I really just kind of went along and learned. I knew the things that I had taught, but I wasn't terribly prepared, I must say, in retrospect. And I wonder how much I could have been, because I don't know that I could have anticipated some of the challenges that we faced when my son was born. Both of my children were somewhat premature, and my son had a heart problem, and you know, so forth. And he had a reflex problem, so feeding was a nightmare. So I don't know how much I could have been prepared. But with all that having been said, I think. I think one of the most important things as a blind person, irrespective of whether you're a parent or whether you're just, you know, making your way in the world, is to be innovative and to be able to find solutions when it pops out at you immediately.
Do you think that agencies for the blind that provide rehab and other assistance, are they doing enough for expectant parents?
I sometimes, and I'm trying to be careful here, because there are some people within agencies for the blind who I think have a good handle on things. But it's my experience that agencies for the blind do a wonderful job when they're willing and able to provide equipment, concrete things. I don't think that in many instances... in my experience and the experiences of other people whom I know about, that they really do much in this arena. Now, there is a caveat to that. Just this week, I got an email from the Carroll Center for the Blind here in Massachusetts, and they're going to have a parenting workshop for expectant and current blind parents. Perhaps they've done that in the past and just never notified me, but that's unusual in my experience. And I don't know, actually. I think it would be wonderful if agencies would promote groups of blind parents. I think it would be wonderful if agencies would offer to have some assistance available. But I have to say that I wasn't involved in my agency for the blind. I was a closed case. I'm certainly on their register, but I've been employed for a number of years, so I probably wouldn't have received those services. And I wonder whether I even would have wanted them. I think they should be available, but I certainly wouldn't want them to be mandatory.
I think I'm a hopeless case with my agency for the blind. Amanda was pregnant with Heidi, we just went to regular antenatal classes, and actually one of the amazing things about having children is the way it expands your networks. You just accumulate friends all over the place, and the first experience that we had with that was the antenatal class. And I must admit, in terms of, changing nappies or diapers, as you call them over there, learning to do all those things, I could just learn those on the on the little baby mannequin that they had at the regular antenatal class anyway.
Exactly. I would say that that's one thing. I think that, that parenting provides, if things work well, I think it provides a wonderful opportunity for kind of leveling the playing field, because all new parents are anxious and uncertain at some level or another. And I have met some wonderful friends through classes and subsequently through recreational activities with my children and so forth. So, and I think that probably would have been the way in which I would choose to network. But there are a few things that it would have been nice to have talked to a blind parent to about along the way that sighted parents just don't have to deal with.
Well, we have someone who's come through on the wrong PIN number, but we'll take them anyway. Hello, code 270.
Yes, this is Ron. And hello, Amy, this is Ron Nulliman.
Hi, Ron, how are you?
I'm just fine. I want to pick up on something I don't think that probably gets enough attention. I think it makes a whole lot of difference between whether you're a blind mother or a blind father. I've had three children, and really I have not run into any problem at all, to my knowledge, with anyone, except my sister-in-law. She's the only one, and that wasn't anything that we couldn't deal with. So I believe society looks very differently on whether you're a blind mother or a blind father. That's what I suspect.
I think that's probably very true, at least to some extent. I think it also depends upon, I don't know how much caretaking responsibility you've taken, Ron, in terms of the nuts and bolts of raising your children. But I think it also depends upon that. Some of the men who are on the list are on the parent list, and I should say, to interrupt myself, that there are actually two blind parents lists that I'm on. One is the one that, Jonathan, you're aware of, and there's also another one run by the NFC of the server that I'm on as well. But anyway, after that aside, some of the people on the list some of the men have indicated that they've had, some startled reactions, some discomfort on the part of other people. But I think it is less for men because of the societal expectation.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, I have taken a fairly active role. I mean, if you talk about changing diapers and feeding and all that sort of thing, I've done all that. And didn't find any particular challenge in doing any of that, I don't think. And again, to my knowledge, I don't remember having any really seriously adverse reactions from anybody other than my sister-in-law. Now, I know some friends of mine that are blind, where it's a blind mother involved, and they have ran into some problems. In one case, there was even some question whether they would be allowed to keep the children or not. It got that serious. And in another case, of course, there's a serious debate over whether they should have children in the first place, because one of them, it was congenital. So, and of course, that is always an issue.
Well, I appreciate those thoughts, Ron. I was interested in your comments about the fact that fathers tend to be a bit more immune, and I certainly think that they are more immune than blind mothers are. One of the things that actually motivated me to do this program now and finally get around to joining the Blind Parents List was an experience that happened to me, and I was going to mention it sometime on the program, but since you're raising this, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. And that is that at the kindergarten, when we in New Zealand talk about kindergartens, we mean something completely different. We mean a preschool institution for children under the age of five. And my daughter goes to that, and although I pick her up quite regularly from kindergarten, they were having a special evening for dads, because most dads don't pick their children up from there, and they put on a few beers and some sausages on the barbecue and invited all the dads along for a father and child evening at the kindy, where they could see them doing their different activities and just see what went on. And my daughter was really looking forward to this for weeks, and so there was a lot of anticipation. And the other night we went along to this evening, and when I went into the gate of the kindy, the teacher there said hello to me and hello to my daughter. And then she said to my daughter, "My goodness, you're such a good girl helping your dad like that." And I said to her, the teacher, "Well, actually, I'm sorry, I get this wrong every time." She said, "You're such a good girl looking after your dad." That's what she said, "looking after your dad like that." And I said to the teacher, "Well, actually, I'm looking after my daughter. I don't need a four-year-old to look after me, and those comments aren't helpful." And I left it at that because I didn't want to spoil the evening. But later in the week, my wife and I had a meeting with all of the teachers to say that if that kind of talk kept continuing, then we would have to withdraw her and other children of ours from the kindy, because we're not prepared to have those attitudes about blindness permeate them at one of the institutions where they learn. And they have apologized, and it was genuine ignorance, not meant to be harmful. And I think it's sometimes important to separate what is genuine ignorance from being mean. But, you know, that's one of the first real areas of discrimination that I found, that someone was openly saying to my four-year-old daughter that she had to look after her father. And I found that most difficult to deal with in a funny sort of way. It was really unpleasant.
Oh, I've had that same kind of incident happen. I took my son to Cub Scouts to a function and ran into almost a same identical exchange. And we got that straightened out pretty quickly. But I think that all of us run into that if we have sighted spouses. I've run into that on numerous occasions, and it really infuriates me when somebody says something like, "Oh, you know, gosh, you're such a wonderful woman to go and take care of that poor blind man." And I just thought, it just infuriates me.
Yeah, well, I was at a wedding actually, where I knew the blind person involved, and that was said about them. You know, what a wonderful woman taking on this blind person, and I just find that atrocious, because actually you don't know what on earth the partner's you know, some disabilities are visible and some disabilities aren't. I think we've all got flaws and challenges, but yes, it's a difficult.
Well, In most cases, I think that the fact of the matter is, you know, we find our own ways to contribute fairly equally, and to say that one is actually taking care of the other one, we are in an interdependency sort of way, but not any differently than any other marriages.
So are your children all grown up now?
Yeah, they sure are, and I miss them. I miss them a lot.
Amy wanted to make a comment, and I'll get back to her in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you, how do you think your children felt, different stages of their growing up, about you being blind? Was there a period where they were resentful about it?
Oh, in my case, I don't think there was any problem at all. I never had the feeling my kids were ashamed or anything. Matter of fact, I think that I was fortunate. I think my boys and my daughter were all pretty proud of their dad and tended to brag about their dad and how well he was doing, and I think certainly today they're extremely proud of me. So I'm very pleased with it. Of course, the admiration is mutual, because I have a high regard for my kids too.
Yeah. Amy, you had something there.
Actually, I'll skip what I was going to say initially and then just come to this. I think that my children, and I ask them periodically, because one of the things that I think it's important to realize as you're, when you decide when to confront somebody and how to confront somebody who infuriates you by making a ridiculous and insulting comment, which is totally inappropriate, and gives your child, your spouse, anybody the message that somehow they need to take care of you. One of the things I think, particularly as your kids get older, that you have to balance is how you respond to that and how it's going to make them feel. And I think that the reality is, because blindness, like many other things, is not something that most people are comfortable with, and which often evokes a lot of reaction, it's important to check in with your kids about, you know, what is this like for you? Are there things which are frustrating? And sometimes I'll even share my own frustrations a little bit, you know, with major moderation with my kids. But I've often checked in with them, and it's been wonderful for me to hear them say that, no, you know, my blindness isn't something that bothers them at all. It's interesting. I remember an occasion in which my daughter and I were standing waiting for a taxi as people exited from the local community center where she'd been involved in an activity. She was about 4, and she said, "Mommy, why do people stare at us?" And I said, "Well, not positive, Sheila, but I suspect that they're staring at us because I'm blind, and that's something they're not comfortable with. And sometimes people, when they're not comfortable, they do rude things like stare at people. They're not comfortable when somebody's a little different." And she said to me, "Well, I don't know what the big deal is, so what if you can't see? That's nothing special."
Yeah. It's so reassuring when you get a comment from them like that, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I think it's interesting. I don't think my son would agree with this at this point because he gets very impatient when we have to wait for anything. But when he was little, he told me one day that he was pleased that we took the bus because he got to take the bus more than the other kids, and he thought that was much more exciting than the car. But I do think it can be difficult for them at times. And I think it's important to be very, very sensitive to that. As I think I said to you, Jonathan, about your situation when you talked about it on the blind parent list, you know, I think that we can vote with our feet and we can tell people that we're going to be taking our children out of schools and out of situations if people aren't cooperative and more enlightened. But I think that there are some situations, like a public school situation, where that's not always feasible. And also, I think that you have to balance sometimes your need to defend your own sense of self and your own the message that you want your children to have with the reaction that they might have if you get into an altercation with someone that they really care about.
Yes.
That's a tough balancing act.
It is, and that's precisely why I walked away from the situation in the evening and had another meeting, because I didn't want to put Heidi in a difficult position. Sorry, Ron, go ahead.
Well, I said it is a tough situation, but you know, I think that a lot of this has to do, and Amy, I think, is touching on this, and that's our own attitude, the attitude that we project. And if we project that we're perfectly normal, that nothing particularly unusual, and we do our best, I think that our kids pick up on that. And at the same time, for the most part, the people around us do too. And I guess maybe I was lucky. I just never had any problem with this particularly at all. And not only that, but the kids that my children went to school with never seemed to have any problem with it. As a matter of fact, my daughter brought her a friend's home quite often, and I was pretty popular with all her friends. I enjoyed coming over here because I always tease them and kid around with them, and we had a lot of fun, and never at any time did I ever get the slightest impression that they were concerned about my blindness.
Yeah. Look, I really appreciate you giving us a call, Ron. You've shared some great thoughts, and I hope that that'll encourage other parents to phone in too.
Well, I hope they do. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks. Bye now. And I should give the telephone number again if you would like to call us. It's in the United States, but you can call anywhere in the world for free using various internet telephony options. It's area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when Marlena's favorite sexy spider phone dude, as she calls him, asks for the PIN number, PIN, you should enter 0480-5512. That PIN again is 0480-5512. We were talking about the networks that being a parent creates, Amy, and babysitting is something that goes on. And this is something that I see coming up time and again, that it's really very rare, it seems, for blind parents to play an equal role in babysitting co-ops and things.
I did try the babysitting co-op myself when my son was in the preschool age range. We didn't live in an area where there were a lot of other children, so it wasn't as much of an option. And because I worked several days a week, he was in daycare, and so I didn't feel very comfortable leaving him at times when I didn't have to go to work. But I would say I think I have fewer opportunities to do babysitting, but than other parents perhaps. And I didn't try it in a large group, you know, of 10 or 12 people. But I have to say that one of the ways in which I've managed some of my challenges in getting the kids places when I've needed to and had difficulty doing it independently is to do a barter system. I have frequently picked up, you know, several children at the bus stop and brought them to my house while somebody ran my child and one of her children or whatever to, you know, to an activity. One of the wonderful things, I think, is that although there are people who are quite close-minded and many, many more people than that who are just plain fearful, I think that there are lots of people who are observant and, at least in my experience, who really are very open-minded. And I've met, I used to take my son to a couple of classes at the Y, and I met several people who are now my lifelong friends. And routinely, I would take care of her, one of my friend's two younger children. I had a toddler of my own. She had a two-year-old the same age and a three-month-old, and I used to take care of those three children at my home while she took our kids to swimming lessons. And so I must say, I think it's a mix. It's like anything else. I think parenting, being a blind parent, is similar in the sense that, as with most experiences of blind people, we're going to find that some people are quite open. Some people are fearful but can be trained, and other people are just uneducable.
Yeah. You know, it's an enormous expression of confidence to leave your child with someone. And one of the things that still touches me when I think about it, probably because, unfortunately, the child died just over after her first birthday, but that friends of mine, long before I was a parent, when this little girl was only 3 or 4 days old, had some urgent things to do, and they'd just come out of hospital, and they chose to leave this little bundle of joy with me, who'd really, you know, I've got nieces and nephews, but it was just such an honor, such an incredible expression of trust for those friends to leave this little girl with me for a couple of hours, and it's just something you never forget.
I totally agree, and I think one of the things that's very helpful in that whole process is to try to put yourself in a situation, particularly where you're in public, where you can demonstrate competency. I think that's a pressure that many of us feel in lots of situations, and I've certainly experienced that pressure myself. But just as an example, although I had friends who would have been very comfortable, you know, going to the bathroom or whatever if we brought our children to the playground, to a large playground, I always made it clear that I was not comfortable monitoring several children in that situation. When my children were little, because I think physical observation and is much more important in the younger years, at least in terms of keeping track of them and maintaining safety, physical safety. When my children were little and we'd go to the doctor's office, they couldn't do some of the things, a few of the things that some of the other kids did, because if I didn't feel that I could safely track what they were doing, then I did some alternative things. So, for example, you know, I didn't take my children alone to open large playgrounds where I couldn't track them in the climbing structures. I didn't, when we went to the doctor's office, when there was a crowd of 40 or 50 kids, I didn't let my infants crawl on the floor where they might pick up something untoward. I brought other things with me and did other things with them, but kept them closer to me. And I think one of the things that that does is that it demonstrates that, and many other things that people do, is that it demonstrates to other parents that, A, you're very vigilant and that you have control within the situation. And I think when they see that, they're far more comfortable. Some of my children's friends now say that when they come over to my house, they know I'm going to know everything, so they don't try to get away with much because I'm probably more vigilant than some of their own parents.
Hmm.
And I think that's true just because you have to be.
It's a tiring thing, though, isn't it? Because you're using all of those other senses to be constantly on the alert, and I suppose sometimes the opposite is true. You can almost overcompensate, and you hear the slightest noise and wonder what they're into.
I think that's certainly true. That's a danger, and I think again you have to strike a balance. One of the things that we did in making choices about where we lived and the kinds of neighborhoods that we lived in and the kind of house we had is that, I made sure that our area was a safe area so that I didn't have to literally be on top of the children if we went outside. I was one of the only parents I probably knew who loved all those nastily noisy outdoor toys that the kids would ride in because it was a great way to track them when they were outside. And we also established a few rules, which I think are good rules for any parent, but which I think, at least for me as a blind parent, were absolutely essential. And the rule was that if I called, that child needed to answer. And if the child didn't answer immediately, we went inside so that they got the message very clearly that this was important.
Absolutely.
And I think, there are things that I think would probably benefit many, many families, which, as blind parents, we have the opportunity to do in a way that our children can understand.
It's the only way you can do it. Not answering when you're called is probably one of the most serious offenses in a household with a blind parent. Has to be.
I think that presents another challenge, too. That challenge is that when you have one sighted parent and one blind parent, particularly when the children are little, putting them to understand that one parent does things one way and one parent does things another.
You don't think that it's important for the parents themselves to set a series of ground rules that say that this is how we do it as a team?
I think that's optimally very, very important, and I think that it's something that certainly my husband and I have done to the extent that it's possible. But I think that realistically, there are going to be times when, because of his vision, he's going to be able to take them certain places. This was probably past tense for me, but that he would have been able to take them certain places that I didn't feel comfortable taking them alone, or that he will do things. He's a sighted person. He will do things in a different way than I will. And I think that we did have a set of ground rules. We do have a set of ground rules, which is quite consistent to the extent that it can be. I think there are going to be divergences. If you think about it, at least from my perspective, when my children were barely verbal, they knew very quickly that they didn't have to put something into their father's hand. They could point, and he would be able to tell them what it was, or recognize it, or do something with it. And with me, they needed to put my hand to it or say something.
Yes, it's funny how they do know that. And I remember the first time, this has happened quite a few times since, but I think the first time it happened was with Richard, who's our second child. He was really interested in something on the television, and Heidi didn't do this, but Richard actually grabbed my hand and put it on the TV screen and said, "Look at this, Daddy."
I had that experience too. One of the things that I think is so wonderful is that, and one of the things that I found very exciting, is that, the kids really get it quite, quite naturally, and you know, my kids were very verbal early, and I, you know, some people would say, oh, well, that's because they had me, because they didn't have, you know, you couldn't do certain things, and it must have been frustrating. And I'm sure there was a bit of frustration, but what a wonderful consequence. My first child, my son, was the most silent baby I've ever met in my life. This was a kid, and still is a kid who takes everything in visually. So he would not make a noise. And when he was first born, one of the many frustrations for a blind parent for me was that he didn't make a lot of noise. And there were times when he was a very, very tiny infant when I couldn't tell whether he was asleep or awake. So I spent the first months of his life, I would park him anywhere. If I had to do something and I couldn't be holding him or whatever, I would park him in his infant seat and I would be doing dishes and I'd say, oh, Stephen, here's a plate and here's a glass and here's whatever. You know, or I'd be cleaning the bathroom or doing, and I would just talk to him and hold things up and show him things all the time. And he talked very early and very profusely, and I'm not sure whether that's because he wanted to shut me up or whether it was because he learned all those words so early.
It's when they're really small. I found this particularly with Heidi, partly because she was our first, but also because she also had some difficulty at birth. She developed hypoglycemia, and she was in the neonatal unit for a while, and it was all pretty traumatic, and they managed to get it all sorted out. But you sort of lie there and you almost wish they'd cry, because you just want to know that, you know, you go 20 million times a night and check that they're still breathing, but then you still want them to cry. And then after about 6 months of it, you just wish they'd let you get a good night's sleep.
You're absolutely right. And I think my husband is probably destined for some great reward at some point, because Stephen was so silent and he was our first and he had heart problems, etc. I was so anxious. I was very anxious. I kept saying, you know, we'd put him under a mobile and I'd say to Jim, what's he doing? And 10 seconds later, what's he doing now? Because there were certain things I didn't know. And luckily Jim was pretty patient and would tell me this if I couldn't know. But as I say, it really all, it is a wonderful experience, but it is also a challenge. And there are certain things that I sometimes have found myself, you know, wrestling with about, you know, what constitutes independence. When, you know, how do you communicate to your child that you want them to do chores, but that you only, that they're not doing it because you can't, and, you know, the best ways of doing those kinds of things, you know, how to manage the how to promote inclusion, what some of the best ways are to make sure that you become a part of the school community to the extent that you can and would have, you know, irrespective of your visual acuity.
Have you gone along to your children's schools and talked about blindness?
No, I haven't. And I'll tell you why I haven't. Contrary to what you might think, given my appearance on this program, I'm not naturally a very public person. And although I see the value, sometimes I feel like when you go and when you go into situations and show the things that you can do, for me personally and only for me, sometimes I feel like you know, I'm on display. I'm the you know, the object in the display case getting examined. So that's not a natural way for me to do that. I have had scout troops come several times in my home, and I've demonstrated things. I did read to my child's class a couple of times. But I find for myself, and this is only for me, that the best way that I've been able to break down the barriers is just by example, is just by doing the things that other people do. Huh. I've been a room parent for my kids, which, you know, has meant you know, coordinating different activities, bringing things in. You know, I attend all of the school functions and the soccer games and all of those things, you know, as any parent would. But I haven't gone in specifically to talk about blindness because I guess, had I been asked to, perhaps I would have. But I think, for me at least, I want people to see blindness as something that is, commonplace isn't the right word, but I think that is just a part of the fabric of society. So for me, it hasn't seemed important to emphasize.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Sort of the kids say, oh, we're doing blind people this week. We're doing blind people. Anyway, we've got another call. We'll take that and say good evening to you, Paul. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul. How is everybody doing?
Oh, we're good. Box of birds, as we say over here.
Right. Well, I was on a website called BBC. Hold on one second here. That's where I got the number from, and I thought there would be a conference call considering, hold on one second, I will give it a name, and I don't know if I'm in the right place right now. It's called BBCOA.
I see.
And there's supposed to be a conference call with Jordan Maxwell.
Well, there may well be, but this isn't it. We're talking on ACB Radio, and we're talking about blind parenting.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm in the wrong place then.
Well, that's all right. It's nice of you to have phoned in, and I'm sorry you're in the wrong place.
That's okay.
Yeah. Well,
thanks.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now. There you go. You see, you just never know what's going to happen on live, unpredictable talkback radio. Is there a best time, do you think, Amy? Is there one particular time in your children's life that you have particularly valued?
Oh, boy. I guess not. I'm thinking, oh, maybe it's this time and maybe it's that time. Probably not. And I think if it's the best time, it probably it doesn't have anything to do with my blindness. It has probably more to do with who I am as a person. I think each time in their lives, each stage has been wonderful in its own way. I certainly loved all of the wonderment and all of the discovery of toddlerhood and the excitement of real babyhood and all of that lovely dependency when I knew, as frightening as it was perhaps at times, when I knew that child was dependent upon me for everything and that I had the opportunity to do so many things with and for my children. But I also now appreciate the fact that the kids are older and we're getting into some wonderful discussions about things. And one of the wonderful things is that when the kids become more verbal, that's also a time when that makes it perhaps a little easier to communicate. So I think every age is wonderful in its own way. I can't say that one's better than another.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't have any more children. Maybe I'm saying that too because now I can't have any more children, so now I'm looking fondly on all those sleepless nights.
A lot of parents have said to me, though, that every age is a good age, and I'm really enjoying the age that Heidi's at, for example, where she's four and very verbal and talking about things, and they come out with such wonderful ideas at that age, such interesting concepts. But she was telling me the other night as I was tucking her in that she's decided she's not going to marry anybody and that she's going to live with me and Mum forever, so that's quite interesting.
My kids went through that. I think now that they're my 13-year-old now saying that he can't, at times, he vacillates between saying that he has to live with us because the rent is cheap, and saying that he is going to move out as soon as he possibly can so he can run his own life completely and doesn't have to live by our rules.
Yeah, yes, oh, well, that's right. There comes a time when they sort of want to be seen about 50 paces behind you, I guess, so we make the most of it while it's here.
Well, that's, you know, you bring up an interesting issue when you say that, because it's interesting. One of the things that I've always done, particularly when we're in very crowded public situations, is I've always kept the kids pretty close to me. And, you know, as you say, you know, when they're 13, they don't want to be too close to mom. And there has been some discussion on the list of parents who said, you know, my child doesn't want to be anywhere near me, and that makes it difficult at times. And I haven't experienced too much of that yet. Perhaps it's just coming. But I think one of the things that this brings up and brought up early on for me is how to both be in charge and keep track of them, but also, you know, allow them to have independence and not to have them feel as if they needed to be guiding me around. Often, I think, one of the problems that I have encountered is that sighted people will presume, used to presume when my kids were little, that if we were attached as we were, that it was because my children were assisting me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you experienced with Heidi. Whereas, you know, from my perspective, it really was, no, I'm doing this so I know where the child is. And I used to have to stop people sometimes when I would ask directions. I took my children from the time they were infants into the city and, you know, on the public transportation and so forth. And I remember asking somebody directions once, and they leaned down to tell my three-year-old.
Oh, no.
You really can't do that. I'm the parent. If you really want to do that, you need to speak with me. But no, at times, when do you take help from your kids? At what age can you take some direction? You know, we go into places that are sometimes unfamiliar, and I'm a competent traveler, but I'm not going to know where something is. And there are times when my kids can see it, and I've one of the things I've thought a lot about, and that I've seen transition over time, is that we have it firmly embedded, I think, with the kids that they know that we're the parents and we're in charge, and I think that they know now. My children know now that if, particularly my 13-year-old, that if I ask him for directions, it's not because I can't or couldn't find a way, but that it may be more expedient at times. And so now I've begun over the past year to do that. But before that, I really didn't feel comfortable doing it because I didn't want them to feel responsible in some way.
Absolutely. Well, on a completely unrelated matter, before we open up for general comments and let you enjoy your evening, you've been running an interesting service on the internet for a wee while where you've been monitoring lots of lists and disseminating information. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Sure. I probably should give a bit of history about how it started. This was actually an outgrowth. I belong to Vibug, which is a computer group in Boston.
Yeah, they do some good stuff, don't they?
Every month, and we have a good time, and we have some very, very talented members. There are some people in that group who could run rings around my computer knowledge, that's for sure. But anyway, when I first got involved, was about to get my first computer, it started popping up and saying, gee, why don't we do this and could we do that? And before we knew it, within a few months, they decided to make a new office a vice president, and I was in that office. And I didn't have a job. I didn't really have a function. So I, other than to kind of try to increase membership, and so I didn't know much of anything. I've only had a computer for a little over 4 years, and I decided to try to glean some information from mailing lists, because at the time when I joined Vibug, many people were still in DOS, not in Windows, and I was starting strictly in Windows. So I got into all these email lists and started forwarding things to people on the Vibug list. And people said, oh, that's great. I really like the fact that, you know, you do this. And I would just, as a courtesy, strip off all the headers and stuff so that people wouldn't have to read through the garbage that I found so frustrating as a new computer user. And it was taking hours of my time. And finally, I said, you know, I really should try to at least cover my costs for my monthly internet charges. And so about a little over a year ago now, a year ago in December of 1999, I started charging a very nominal fee for people who are really busy and who don't want to read a lot of list traffic but want to keep up to date. I now monitor about 60 lists, mostly blindness-related email lists, a few mainstream lists as well. And after stripping off extraneous headers and footers and so forth, I send out what I think are about the 20-25 messages per day to my subscribers who pay not for the content of my messages, because I always put the originator of the message, their contact information at the top, so that people will know it's not my writing that they're seeing, but it's my forwarding and filtering abilities that they're paying for. So that's the service.
And how's it going? Is it doing well?
It is doing well. I think the thing that I'm most proud of is that this is the second year now, and I have people now subscribe for a calendar year, and I'd say I've had a 98.5% return rate from my original customers. I've been really proud of that. So I think people who do try it really, really like it. And now that I can accept credit card payments, that's really opened up to an international market, too.
Well, there you go. So if people would like to know more about that, how do they find out more?
Probably the best way is to contact me via email, and my email address is aruell@mediaone, that's MediaOne, .net.
You could probably come up with a groovy domain name, couldn't you?
I probably could.
Yeah.
Before we end, Jonathan, perhaps I should give people the subscription instructions for blind parents.
Please do, because that was my next question, so go ahead.
Blind parents. Okay. Let me just explain the way it works. If you send a blank message to blind-parents-subscribe@topka.com, what will happen is that I will get a notification that there is a subscription request. And what I ask people to do, I'll write people a little message, and it says, thank you for your interest in our list. Please write an introduction telling us a little bit about yourself and your family and your interest in the list, which I then will post to the group. That facilitates the group getting to know people and getting the ball rolling in terms of our welcoming and acquainting ourselves with new members, and also tries to give some assurance that we don't get spammers on the list, you know, and people who are really not interested in blind parenting but, you know, want to have involvement with the list for other purposes that are unrelated. So that's how it works.
It's a great list in the sense that the traffic's not that high, but it's good quality traffic, and it seems to be a very supportive community. Everyone supports one another, and I've been on it for less than a week, but it's clear that people have gotten to know one another over the period that the list has been running, and it's, as I say, a supportive kind of group.
Yeah, thanks for your comments. I think we try to keep things on topic. You know, occasionally I get on my moderator's soapbox and say, okay, come on, let's make sure those subject lines are good, and let's try to, you know, all the things that happen on any list, and let's try to make sure we're respectful of other people's divergent points of view and so forth. But I think it is a supportive list. We get about, I'd say, an average of 12 to 15 messages a day, sometimes more or less, depending upon whether, you know, how hot the topics are. And we have people whose children range from expectant parents to people who have children in their teens and early 20s.
And some who are even deciding whether to have children or not.
Yes, we even have a couple of those people, and we have a couple of people actually who've come on and said, I want to have children. I don't know whether I'm going to be able to, but I want to be prepared just in case. And so we even have some people there as well. But I'd say the majority of our parents, we have both men and women. I think we have a contingent of young mothers who are stay-at-home moms who probably tend to post more than the rest of us. But we have several rather active dads on the list, and a number of us who also work outside the home and, you know, who drop in a little less frequently.
I note that there has been a birth announcement on the list today, which is always very exciting, always fills the heart with joy when you see those, and an interesting dialogue about the relative merits of epidurals versus natural labor. And that's always an interesting topic. And I know that in this household we've looked all of the research up and asked professional people and everything like that, that in the end it was all taken out of our hands because Amanda's labours are so fast that there was no question of even being able to look at an epidural. So yeah, that was an easy one to fix. It wasn't easy at the time, though.
There are times when it's nice not to have to make a decision. But I think one of the things that as I was reading in preparation for this, kind of reading over some of the archives, there are certainly some things, and particularly attitudinal issues, which we struggle to deal with and compensate for. Those are the things that I think join us as blind people. But most of the other things that we experience are things that other parents experience just in the same way. And I think that's one of the exciting things I found about being a blind parent, is that it does allow you to sometimes network with people who might not have allowed you to network with it in other ways. There's nothing like sitting with a cute infant and start to talk about your babies, or when the toddlers interact, and be able to strike up a conversation with another parent and help them to feel at ease, so that then some of the barriers begin to break down.
It's so good to have that support in terms of those attitudinal issues. And also, I must say, as a sequel to the story I told earlier about the problems that I faced last week, what's really reassuring is that when we told a number of our friends who really we've met, we've only been living in this town for 8 months, and so all of the people we've met, really, we've met through our children. And when we've mentioned this incident, all of them, without exception, were totally appalled. And it gives you hope, you know, it makes you realize that, in fact, the majority of people these days respect you and treat you as a full and competent parent, and that's always reassuring. So in some ways, there is a silver lining to those particular clouds.
I think potentially there is. I'm not sure I'm quite as optimistic as you are, in the sense that I think that sometimes one of the things which makes me pause when I am tempted to and sometimes do make a very strident response when someone says some off-the-wall comment that's totally inappropriate, is sometimes I think, too, that there are people who, if they don't say it, they're still thinking it. And so I think that we still have a way to go, for sure. Hmm. But I think you're right. I think that it is getting better. And the more that we can do... the more that we can do to be visible, whether it's walking our, when my kids were younger, I used to walk them to the bus stop just like every other parent. And that, I think, that spoke volumes. And I think that, and I know so many other parents who are doing, far more, many, many things that are instructive in that way. Just by example, just by being in the community, by being out there and doing things. I go to all, I think most of us, we go to all of our kids' games and events and whatever. Sadly, in some ways, when my daughter scored her first soccer goal, I wasn't even aware that she was on the field because it was her
first or second game. I didn't know the parents of the kids on her team yet. And my husband was coaching. But you know what? She knew that I wasn't particularly clear about what was going on in the field, but I was there, and that was important to her, and I think important to the other parents who I eventually did get to know.
Yeah. Yes, you're so right. Well, this has been great, Amy, and I hope we can do this again, and I appreciate you giving up some of your evening to talk to us. It's the best possible thing that can happen to you being a parent, really, though.
It just is the best. It's the most magical, miraculous, wonderful thing that I've ever experienced, and you just grow with them. It also helps you to grow in ways. Probably because I've always wanted my children to be able to never suffer because of my blindness. I think I've probably stretched personally in ways that I wouldn't have expected to do otherwise, and wouldn't have had the opportunity to have experienced some of the things that I've experienced if it weren't for my children.
So yeah.
They're a wonderful, wonderful gift.
Absolutely. And, you know, we think about it. The fact that we can create another human life. I mean, it's very high-tech stuff, isn't it? Incredibly high-tech. It really is. It's just remarkable. Well, look, thank you so much, Amy. I've loved this. And, you know, I could talk about being a dad forever. So I've enjoyed this a lot, and I hope we can keep in touch. And thanks for all that you do for the blind community.
Thanks very much.
We'll talk again.
Good evening.
Bye-bye now. And that's Amy Rule. We've been talking to her about blind parenting, and it's been a great hour. Now the phones are open, the board is free, and it's part of it's time for the open forum here on Blindline on ACB Radio Mainstream. If you would like to talk about anything at all that's been on your mind over the last week or so, then you're welcome to give us a call. Area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a PIN, you can enter 0480-5512. That PIN again is 0480-5512. You're welcome to talk about anything that you like. One of the things that has been on the blindness lists, many of the blindness lists in the last week, is the decision by Freedom Scientific to charge a $20 fee for those who wish to receive the JAWS 3.7 update, grade, but update, and some people claim there's a huge difference. Even if you've got a software maintenance agreement, you can certainly download the thing off the internet for free if you're a 3.7 user, but if you don't have internet access, and of course if you don't, you won't be listening to this program, then you have to pay $20 for the CD, even if you've got a software maintenance agreement, because it's an update and not an upgrade. Interesting. What do you think of that? If you'd like to comment on that, you're most welcome to give us a call and do so. Last week, because of the Ronnie Millsap interview, and I have never in my work in professional radio or internet radio or anything like that, I have never seen anything like that in terms of the way the calls were banked up. At one point, we had about 40 stacked up in a row. And that was certainly testing one's web navigation skills with a page full of links, all relating to different calls from all around the world. But I didn't get to tell you, Marlena had a program a couple of weeks ago on Blind Spot where she was talking about embarrassing moments. And had this experience happened to me prior to that program, I guess I would have shared that with Marlena, but I will share it with you because I feel better having confessed this to someone. Nearly 2 weeks ago, many of you probably don't know that I do quite a bit of consultancy work through my company. I'm officially employed to do ACB radio for 20 hours a week. It takes a lot more time than that, but that's officially what happens. And then I go and do other work of various types. And I've been doing a lot of consultancy work, which has seen me away from home in the office for the latter part of the week lately. And I was in a very nice hotel in Auckland, which is New Zealand's largest city. And it was a great evening because New Zealand was thrashing Pakistan at the cricket. This is lovely. Life is good. And I was listening to the cricket and deciding that it was time to run a bath. Had a nice bath they did in this nice suite that I was in. And I ran the bath and went to get organized and got a bit sidetracked listening to the cricket and what have you, and the water pressure was obviously much greater than I had anticipated. And when I went into the bathroom again, there was this huge puddle all over the bathroom floor. It was really like ankle deep, man. I just could not believe how quickly the bath had filled. So I quickly let the water out of the bath and found every towel that I could in the place and started mopping it all up and wringing the towels into the bath. But I just found that I wasn't keeping up. I eventually walked back onto the carpet to see if I could find something else, and there, squish, 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 the water had travelled from the bathroom some significant distance across the carpet of this very nice hotel. And I just thought, this is ridiculous, you know, how could I have been so stupid as to do this? So I, in the end, had to admit defeat and rang the reception desk and say, you know, look, I hate to tell you this, but I have just done the most incredibly stupid thing. And explained to them what I'd done, and they sent the duty manager up. And the trouble was, you know, I just felt so wretched for having done such a dumb thing. And they were so apologetic. Isn't that always the way? That when you're ready to kind of lay down and die with embarrassment, somebody always comes along who's just so nice and it seems to make it worse. You almost wish that they'd tell you off and order you off the premises or something. But they relocated me to another room. And I said, look, you know, I'll gladly pay whatever it costs to get this mess cleaned up. There's absolutely no excuse for it. And they just said, well, don't you worry, that's fine. You know, all is forgiven. But I'm really not sure whether I will go back to that particular hotel again. It was very nice and all that, but, you know, I just don't know if I could face it. Hello to area code 541. Thanks for calling Blindline.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Stan Luttrell.
How are you,
and
Stan?
I'm calling from Medford, Oregon. I am doing just great, and by the way, thank you for your prompt email. I emailed you earlier in the week concerning forging ahead, and I'm ordering. In fact, I'm in the process of ordering that, and it should be in my hot hands in about a week.
Oh, good, but I hope every home has one.
It is, you know, because I really like the way that you've done some of the tutorials, even on the main menu, where you talked about sound forges. So very, very well done. Very well done.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope that you benefit from it.
Oh, I'm sure I will. It'll take some time, but I'm sure I'll benefit. But, you know, it's interesting, because I think every one of us have had things happen to us where we'll do something, or and then it embarrasses us. And unfortunately, right now, I can't think of anything that comes to mind. But, you know, because sometimes when someone mentions something, you'll have a million things running through your head, and all of a sudden when they mention it, they'll all run away. But, you know, and it happens. I mean, I think that, I remember one. I was at, there was a radio station sales party. And I normally do not wear sunglasses, you know, and I decided in this case I will wear them. Well, there was one thing I forgot to do. There was a price tag on the eyepiece of the, and I did not notice it was there. And someone came up to me and said, well, you know, are you going to take the price tag off the eyepiece? I said, yeah, I think it would help if I did. And I realized it was there, and I felt like a complete imbecile.
Yeah, but you can bet that before somebody said that, people were probably glancing at each other and pointing and wondering, should we say something or should we leave it or what?
Exactly, and I think that happens, and then people should, you know, be able to do that. But sometimes, and I think a lot of times it depends on how comfortable they are with you as a person for them to be able to say something. And fortunately, people, you know, at the station party were very comfortable. I mean, it lasted till 3 o'clock in the morning and had to be doing some work at 5:30 the next day, you know, so apparently it worked out well. But I think it's something that speaks well when you can get people to be able to say something that I feel comfortable about that.
Yes, I've done things. I know that somebody I know quite well who's blind turned up to a very important function with a price tag hanging off a new suit. You know, there were some very important national dignitaries at this function, so that was a bit dodgy. And then I've been to a function once wearing odd shoes. That's always an embarrassing thing.
Oh, you had, what, you mean one shoe of each color?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I can see that. that's the reason, you know, it's always helpful if you do have shoes of different styles and colors to make sure you segregate them in such a way that you don't get them confused.
Yeah, well, that's a stupid thing. I mean, they felt completely different, and I think I was just like, you know, in those days I was doing the breakfast show on a radio station, and so you'd sort of get up really early and you'd stumble around.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd find the coffee and you'd sort of throw on whatever there was, you know. So that's what happens. It's marvelous. But you see, it's not necessarily a blindness thing. It may be that some of those things are a bit more visible when you're sighted and you can correct them, but a lot of people do daft things like that.
Well, one day when I was doing the early morning show co-hosting, I had a situation where looking up and giving the updates of temperatures and different other things, you know, weather and news and all this sort of thing. Well, I made a terrible mistake, and something I always swear I'm never going to do is I was having a cup of coffee, and I had it on the desk near the computer, and I bumped the cup of coffee,
God,
sending it catapulting into the keyboard.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden it went, and I thought, oh, great. And I said, well, you know, that's the reason we don't do this anymore. But, and it's terrible because I imagine that happens to quite a few people. I mean, I know it does, but to me, it's terrible when you have something that you work with every day and you have something like that happen. And,
oh,
of course, you don't even, you know, realize that's going to happen. Now, have you ever done anything like that or with your computer, with your keyboard?
I haven't. Touch wood. I think the best thing that happens on the air, of course, is the breakup. You know, when you're working with someone on the air and one of you breaks the other up to the point that you just can't go on. One of the most wonderful experiences in my commercial broadcasting career was I did a breakfast show in New Zealand where I would interview a lot of politicians, you know, get the Prime Minister on and different cabinet ministers and things, and it was quite a fun show to do, lots of adrenaline. And we were fortunate to have the country's top newscaster, sort of like the Walter Cronkite of New Zealand, really, and it was a real privilege to work with him. And I just couldn't possibly imagine him ever losing it. And one day he was in the news booth reading the story. It was a bit of a stupid story anyway, about how apparently the Northern Ireland, I think it was, it might have been it was the Northern Ireland Tourist Promotion Board chairman had come over to New Zealand. This was at a time when there was a lot of stuff going on in Northern Ireland. And he'd come over to New Zealand and he said that really, visiting Northern Ireland was no less safe than crossing Queen Street. Queen Street's the main street of Auckland. And so anyway, he read the story, and then it was up to me. Normally what would happen is that he'd give a time check and I'd play a little jingle, and he'd go into travel information, you know, plane arrivals and departures and those sorts of things. And before I played this jingle, I couldn't resist, and I turned on my mic and I said, you know, a very funny thing happened to me the other day. I was just crossing Queen Street and just managed to avoid being hit by a mortar bomb. And then I played the jingle, and for some reason, this really tickled his fancy, you know, and he was trying to read this. He's trying to read this travel information, and he just couldn't. And this is a man who had such an earnest, serious, authoritative sound to his voice, totally guffawing with laughter and not being able to stop. And in the end, he just said, what a dreadful young man that Jonathan Mosen is, and we had to go to a commercial break.
Oh, that's terrible, because I had that happen to me where I would just, I co-hosted with another person, and all of a sudden something hit me as funny, something I don't even remember what it was now, and it just completely broke me up, and it was just plain terrible, and we had to go to a music cluster real quick. I'll tell you, it's really strange when that happens. By the way, you know, when you talk about radio and jingles and all that, that reminds me of something. I would say about a year and a half ago, you were looking for, maybe a year and a half ago, you were looking for the Pam's jingles.
Yeah, man, I love that. I love jingles.
Did you find the Pam jingle?
I found a few. You can get a series of montages on Pams.com.
Well, a friend of mine has a whole bunch of CDs with Pam's jingles on them.
Wow. You can get quite a few of them on the Real Top 40 Radio site. I don't know if you're familiar with therealradio.com.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I love that. They had some great DJs of the United States on there.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Well, I hear you have a phone call.
Yes, we've got a few.
I'll make way for someone else.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your call, Stan, and we'll talk to you very soon, I hope.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And let me just hit that thing. This is Blind Line on. Hit that thing. This is Blind Line on AC Radio Mainstream. Hi, thanks for holding.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi,
good
Richard.
Evening.
How's it doing?
Hi, Richard. How's it doing? Not too bad, Jonathan. Yeah, I can sympathize with your water experience. I had done something when I was going to taking a computer course in the city one time. There happened to be this little restaurant near the building, and I happened to go in there, and I sit down, I was ready to order something, open up my wallet, and I say, oh, I have no money.
Oh, man.
I had to, I leave, I left pretty quick, you know.
What did you do? How did you get out of it?
I just said, you know, sorry, I just realized, you know, that I don't have any money. I just was flat out honest with the person, and then like a week or so later, I came back to the restaurant with money and gave them some business.
Oh, so they didn't get you to wash the dishes or something. If I was the restaurant proprietor, that's what I would have done. Wash the dishes, mate. Get into the kitchen.
Yeah. And actually, you know, the funny thing that you should say that about the tub, when my parents went to Italy, my father needed to put his suit in the bathroom and turned on the hot water to kind of steam the suit and get the wrinkles out, and the same thing happened to them, and they were quite embarrassed and had to really get the towels out and start mopping.
Yeah, and what's worse is, of course, when the whole thing leaks into the floor below. But I don't think that happened in my case. But you just feel so. People said to me afterwards, Amanda and other people said, well, don't panic too much about it because they'll have insurance that covers this. But you still feel like a total idiot.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, I did that. As a matter of fact, I even did that one time, too. I went and took a shower in a hotel, and I thought, you know, it had a curtain. It didn't have a door on it. So I thought I had the curtain in the tub and all, and then when I realized after I got out of the shower and took the shower, I mean, I walked out and the whole rug was soaked. I said, I'm in trouble here.
I'll never forget an interview that CNN had one day. Now, I don't know what the program was, but it was one of those programs where they talk to successful business people, and you're supposed to be inspired by them. And I don't even remember who the guy was, except that he was a hotel magnate. An hotel magnate, just in case Michael's listening. But he was really quite successful. And what happened was that at the end, they said, is there one piece of advice you would like to pass on before we leave this interview? And he said, yeah, when you're staying in a hotel, the bath curtain goes inside, not outside.
Yeah, but you know what the problem is when you get these fancy bath covers that are like maybe two layers or something, and you think you have the whole thing inside the tub, and you find out later that you didn't.
Yeah, I hate that. Yeah. Anyway, is there anything else you wanted to raise before we go on? You got something else there, have you?
Yeah, it's about JFW and their CD, this whole CD thing, and I do kind of agree. I do have an SMA. But the other thing, you know, that really annoys me, too, is that they still haven't done any. They still seem to be stuck into this 256-color issue. I mean, I have a video card that's able to do 32-bit colors. It's an ATI all-in-wonder card, video card. It's a good card. As a matter of fact, my JAWS Tech told me to get that card when I was putting my system together. But I had some problems. You know, when I installed the update, the 37U, I found that there was absolutely no difference at all to any of my programs. It's still, when I go into Outlook 2000, it still won't read it automatically, and it won't still read, you know, when I have messages already read and whatever. And when I called HJ and told him about it, well, I said, well, it's because maybe we don't, you know, we can't do 32-bit colors. And it's like, excuse me, guys, but it seems like the whole industry has gone beyond 256 colors. Come on, guys.
Yes, and I believe that 16-bit high color is supported by WindowWise now.
Yeah, I did remember them saying that, yes. And so, I mean, it seems like they have to, and especially the thing that surprises me is that, especially if they want to promote these things like Zoom Text and these OCR packages at all, I mean, you got to deal with a lot of different colors, different prints and all, and if you're just restricting yourself to only 256 colors, man, you're not gonna cut it.
Yeah, very good point. Well, I appreciate you raising that, Richard. I've got a couple of calls stacked up, so we'll go and see what they have to say.
Yes, I know, as usual. All right, Jonathan, you take care, and how's your daughter?
She's the pastor off now, thanks. Yeah, she's all mobile again. She doesn't have all her arm movements back, but she does have the plaster off, so she's very happy.
Yeah, that's always good.
Yeah.
All right, Jonathan, okay. You take care.
Thanks, Richard. Bye now. Blind Line with ACB Radio Mainstream. Hello, area code 617.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you doing this evening?
I'm very well, thanks.
This is Brian calling.
I thought it was Brian. I thought, but surely I'm not having such a prestigious person calling me. But yes, it really is you.
Oh, there you go. Incredibly prestigious, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here smiling because I came back from the computer store today with an iTouch mouse. Do you use one of those as a tablet?
I've got the iTouch keyboard, but why would you want the mouse?
Well, it vibrates. So it gives you the ability to move the mouse around a surface, and you get to feel through vibrations in the mouse what the video elements are on the screen.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes, I've seen those. What's the verdict? Are you pleased with its performance?
Well, it's early for me to tell. But at this point, if you're trying to map out how something is laid out on the screen, it can be pretty valuable. I was amazed at all of the different sensations that can be achieved by simply varying the vibration that's happening inside the unit.
You feel the vibes, man.
It's amazing how... Oh, yeah, there you go. It's amazing how the pulsations... by making them faster or slower or patterning the on-off nature of them can give you a false impression of different textures, those kind of things.
Well, maybe if you get up to speed with it, you could do a review for Main Menu for us if you have an opportunity, because I'm sure there'd be a lot of people interested
so
in
much.
That.
Yeah, and considering the device is only $40, it works out really... Again, if one's into experimenting and that kind of stuff, it can be, you know, might be of some value. The reason I decided to go and check this out is later on this month I have the people from Vertouch from Israel.
Yes.
Coming by after they stop by at CSUN, and they're going to stop by here and leave with me a couple of their Vertouch mice. Those are they're an oversized mouse with three fingertip refreshable braille displays. I mean, that doesn't do it quite justice because it's kind of a cross between a refreshable braille display and an opticon display.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not limited to the grid of an 8-dot cell, those kind of things. You can actually move it around and through your fingertips feel as if you're brushing your three fingertips across a multi-pin array of what's on screen. And you can, by clicking combinations of the five buttons on the back of the mouse, you can say, well, I'm looking at a letter here. Please simplify the font to a single-line font rather than a weighted font and make it easier to read raised line, if you will, characters, if you know your alphabet. And also a couple of other clicks will convert every print letter into a grade one braille letter so that you can look at something that has print on the screen and actually read it in braille. I'm looking forward to giving that a test drive.
I bet you that costs a pretty penny, does it? How much are they charging for that sort of technology?
The estimated price, because they're not currently available for sale, they're just now going into manufacture, is $5,000.
Well, now my cynical brain would think I'd rather buy a braille note that gives me a braille display or a braille light millennium or whatever for that.
If the goal was for a braille display, I would 1,000% agree with you. This is not by any means a replacement for that. Where I see it as being useful for individuals who have very unique sets of circumstances. Case in point would be I have a young lady out here in Massachusetts who's an oceanographer. She works for Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. Her lifetime career has been charting ocean currents. She has RP, and over a course of years, she's lost enough of her vision that it's getting harder and harder for her to interpret the visual elements of her job. She goes on to sea voyages and drops buoys overboard, and they go sink down into the ocean's currents, float around, and bob up to the top and send their information via satellite back to her home port. And computers there gather up the information and create graphical representations of the ocean's currents. Not something that would be easily converted into a series of data points and text for you to read in braille and the like. So I thought this might give her the opportunity to feel the graphics that her data is converted into. So we're going to take a look at that.
That really does sound fascinating.
Well, again, I just don't see it as, like you said, a replacement for a braille display or something that somebody's going to play games with, something along those lines. But I do see it as maybe being able to allow you to get access to those graphical issues that simply are not convertible into text. You know, when I think about, well, would I read a bar chart with this? I have read a bar chart with it. It's doable if that's the best way for you to get access to the information. I tend to read an Excel spreadsheet by looking at, you know, the raw data itself rather than trying to interpret a chart that's generated from that raw data.
Yes.
And I've got another gentleman here who works for an investment bank, and he's expected to review a great deal of information, financial information, to determine whether or not people investing with his bank should invest their money in particular business ventures. And so much of that information really has to be looked at graphically. So I was thinking maybe this device could be of value to him as well. You know my friend Tom Lutkowski over at WGBH?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Tom Lutkowski, he does a lot of research into how to make things that, generally speaking, have been deemed inaccessible to blind people accessible. Things like multimedia CD-ROMs. Right now he's dealing with web TV, those boxes you can add to your regular television and be able to access the web through your cable company without the benefit of having a computer. He's having to look at a lot of things way before anybody's developed access to them. I was thinking this mouse might allow him to more independently look over the look and feel of a program that he's trying to gain access to. Again, there's quick examples of somebody who really needs access to the true full graphical interface, not some converted variant.
Well, as I say, if you get a chance to compile something for main menu, that'd be fascinating. And speaking of that, are you still doing some stuff in the kitchen in your myriad of spare time?
Oh, yeah, well, a combination of things. One, yes, I am, and I have done some mock stuff here on my system.
Ooh.
I've ordered the new sound forge. Thank you very much for pulling us in on that reduced cost sound forge.
Mm.
So I'm hoping that will give me a little easier editability of things. I did do a series of small things. I may have mentioned to you that I cook fajitas, Mexican fajitas from scratch.
Lovely.
So I did a mock-up show of that. But it's hard for me to get excited about cooking right now because I'm on a weight loss gig.
Are you really? Oh, that's outrageous. Well,
when did I last see you? When did I last see you?
WBU.
Right. I've lost 43 pounds since then.
God. What do you, well, how do you do
so
that?
So I think I'm staying out of the kitchen.
So you're not on, is it a strict kind of regime that you've been put on, or you're just doing this of your own?
There's a system here in the United States, I assume it's worldwide, called Weight Watchers.
Oh, yeah, we have that here.
Right, and they have what they call the 1-2-3 plan, where everything you eat has a point value.
Yeah.
And when you live within the point values, then you can lose weight. And I'm on it, my wife's on it, many of my friends are on it, and we're all having quite a bit of success with it. I'm trying to get down to another 40 pounds, and then I will get my ideal weight and be able to thumb my nose at the world, huh?
But Paul's not on it, though, is he?
No. Paul's got plenty of troubles in his life. I don't know whether your listeners are aware that Paul Edwards, shortly before our mid-year meetings, experienced a flood in his home of about 18 inches of water throughout the house. So his house is under reconstruction. His wife, while visiting the ACB National Office, tripped and more than broke her ankle, so she's been hobbling around on a cast throughout all that experience. And then recently, just before going to ACB mid-year board meetings, his house was burgled.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
And they stole his computer. So he's currently without a personal computer. And unfortunately, the computer and many other things they stole were the kind of things not normally covered by a household insurance policy. So...
Oh.
So he's got to save up a little money before he can be back with us on the internet.
I hadn't caught up with that last piece of information. Well, you know, do give him my best and the best from Amanda as well. I didn't realize that he was in that predicament. My gosh, they've had such a bad run, haven't they?
He has had a very bad run of luck. I'm pleased that he's able to keep smiling through it. You know, we're going down to the World Blind Union North American Region meetings in Grenada, I'm not sure how they pronounce the island down there in the Caribbean, but we'll be heading down there, on the 19th of March, and I hope that getting that much closer to where he was originally born and raised, he was, you remember, born in Trinidad, down in the Caribbean, he'll be only one island away from home while down there, and maybe soaking up some of that sun will replenish his batteries a bit. Maybe he is solar-powered after all.
Oh, gosh. Do give him our warmest regards. It's a dreadful series of events. And you look after yourself as well. I hope you're not getting too grumpy with all this weight loss, man.
Oh, no. I'm keeping a good smile on my face. Got lots to do to keep myself busy. I'll be interested in a future discussion of the issues of distance learning, which is what keeps me awake during the regular work week. We're about to build a new computer center on our campus at the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton, where I work. And in the process, we're trying to learn more about distance learning activities. I understand in your professional life, you do a little bit of that, do you not?
I do indeed, yes.
Well, I'll be interested in chatting some of that over with you, see what we can learn from one another.
Let's do that. It'd be great to catch up anyway over a virtual Budweiser or something. No, please, not a Budweiser. Over something.
There you go. Something that doesn't require a great deal of chilling in order to be palatable.
Yes, well, absolutely. Hey, take care. In regards to Kim and to Paul as well when you're next speaking with them.
Very good. Be good, and hello to all your listeners.
I'm always good.
Keep up the good work, Jonathan.
Thank you for calling.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. Let me push this one here and say very good evening to area code 214. Thank you for holding.
Hi, this is Wayne, the blind journalist.
How's it? Oh, yes, I remember. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was in a bit of a slump in which I was uninspired, mostly procrastinating. But now I'm back in the swing of things, and I'm writing stories. And if I can motivate myself, I'm going to edit some tonight before I go to bed, and that sort of thing.
I'm delighted to hear that. So you're up and running at full speed by the sounds of it.
Oh yeah, you know I'm not where I should be, but I'm doing I'm trying to get in a pattern of doing at least two stories a week, and they're for my reporting class, and they're graded on not only quantity but quality. So, you know, that's part of my saving grace right there. Even if I don't have the proper number, at least if I can get like B's on them, I might come out even.
Hmm. There's lots of good stuff. Oops, I just dropped the other microphone there. There's lots of good stuff to write about at the moment. What kind of things do you prefer to work on?
Well, currently we're assigned to beats, and my beat is the or sections, and my section is the disabilities office on my campus. So I'm covering that as well as disability related issues. One of the stories that I need to edit is in regards to a new reader program on our campus for blind people mainly, in which day-to-day management of readers is kind of going to be given more to the blind student instead of having the office do it, which is good.
Yeah. Do you think that disability issues get sufficient profile in the media? I mean, it strikes me that in the US, disability issues are getting a bit more press than they used to, and they're certainly getting more press than they do here in New Zealand. But I'm wondering whether you think that issues are adequately covered and that the coverage that there is sort of on target, is appropriate.
Well, curious to bring that up. Because it was an article in, as far as the answer to your question, more or less, you know, there's good articles that are written that present disabled people and blind people in a good light, and then there are articles in which it leaves a little to be desired, like one that I saw today in my, in my local paper in my town here, about an article about a blind, or soon to be a blind boy that was losing his vision to glaucoma. And it did a pretty good job until it got to the end when it said that his mother asked him, what would you like to do before you lose your sight? And he said, I want to go to an amusement park. I want to go to Disney World in Florida. And at the end of the article, it said, if you'd like to donate money for this kid to go to Disney World, then contact such and such bank. And I'm like, well, that's, as well-intentioned as that is, left kind of a bad taste in my mouth.
Isn't that the way America's going, though? I mean, I was somewhat interested, to use a neutral term, in a story that was running during the election campaign last year, when a partially sighted woman got up and complained at a Bush meeting about some facility she wasn't getting or equipment she wasn't having access to, and Governor, as he was then, Bush's response was to effectively pass the hat around the meeting to raise money for this particular equipment that the partially sighted woman wanted. That's compassionate conservatism, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's some things that I've heard and have seen about President, former Governor Bush, like a couple years ago, the State Agency for the Blind in Texas came up for review by the legislature and by one of those watchdog committees that reviews all the state agencies and commissions, and there was a lot of controversy over whether it should be put under an umbrella or left as a separate agency for the blind. And there was a demonstration that I was fortunate enough to take part in, given I was in the right place at the right time, down at the state capitol, and ended up President and Governor Bush signed the bill, but we were able to get a compromise so that I think that the reporting of cases and general reports is done in a different way, but other than that, services are pretty much the same. So there's, you know, there's some ill feelings there. And at some point, that's going to come out, and, well, you know, I'm a Republican, but that's not going to be on his outlook and his visibility and that kind of thing.
Interesting thoughts. I'm really pleased that you got back in touch, and please keep in touch. I hope it continues to go well for you.
Thanks. Can I ask you a quick computer question?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Are Access and PowerPoint versions of 2000 fairly accessible with JAWS?
Fairly, yes. I know there are people who are using them with some degree of success. People are doing PowerPoint presentations and working in Access, and I think you may even be able to find tutorials to assist with its use. But there are certainly JFW scripts for both programs, so you should be able to have some luck.
Okay, that's good to know.
Excellent. Take care and keep in touch.
All right.
Okay.
See you.
Bye-bye now. Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. Let's take this call. Hello there. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Jonathan. I thought I would call toward the end of the hour. I thought it might be better that way. And anyway, I want to read a short story a lady sent me after I get through, so I probably wouldn't connect back up to Blind Line after I got through with the call anyway. So I thought, well, I'll just call toward the end of the hour. That might be better.
Hey, how are you this evening?
Well, I'm pretty good. I'm getting over a frightful, horrible computer experience I had last night. It was terrible. I turned the computer on, and the thing, it starts making an awful noise on startup, which it kind of makes the noise a little bit like a motor engine revving up, like somebody racing a motor for about a couple of seconds, but it stopped. Somebody told me it was the bearings that got cold or something, and it quit after a minute. But last night it was just awful. It sounded like something inside was rattling and shaking, and it didn't start. And so it just sat there, and I usually press enter when it don't start right away because I don't know what else to do. So I ran in the living room, kind of woke my mother up from a doze. I go, Mom, and she goes, What? And I go, Something's really wrong with my computer this time. It's horrible. You know, because when I think something's wrong with a computer, I mean, I get really upset, and I actually just about hyperventilate.
Gosh.
And the problem was,
That's pretty. I know it's very disconcerting, isn't it? Especially when you use it so much.
Yes, it is. And what it said when my mother came in and looked at the screen, it said Windows does not detect a mouse, and the mouse was still there, and it hadn't even come loose.
Yeah.
And hers does it quite often, but mine, that was the first time mine ever did that. And when she did, the computer was still on, and she was pressing the mouse buttons, and I had to turn it off a nasty way and restart it the bad way. And then when it come up talking, I was able to go into Outlook Express, but when I went to connect to Control-M to connect to get my email, it paused before it said Control-M, and then it didn't say the usual dialogue about choosing the service you want to connect to and enter your username and password, all that stuff it usually says. And I couldn't get out of Outlook Express. When I pressed Alt-F4, it just said Alt-F4 and didn't get out of it, and I had to turn it off again the bad way, and she fussed with it a little bit more. And on the second, after the second time, she messed with it, because, I mean, she said, well, press anything, because she always pressed every key on there, and I pressed the minus key, which normally when JAWS is running is the JAWS cursor, and then I pressed the left mouse button on the keyboard, you know, when JAWS was talking. It did, because I heard that sometimes if it does that, you press the left mouse button and it'll return you to the desktop. But I don't know. I had to turn it off twice and restart it twice, and she had to mess with it twice before it got back to normal.
Huh. Have you got an up-to-date virus checker?
No, I don't have a virus checker because, from what I hear, like the Norton antivirus and McAfee, after a year they start charging for updates and all like that. And my mother says, well, if they don't automatically catch all viruses without you having to update them all the time, what good are they? So I just don't have one. I'm just real careful.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a very dangerous practice in this day and age not to have one. You know, it all you need to do is inadvertently open the wrong message, or even sometimes you can get messages in HTML that have something weird and nasty embedded. So it's a bit like riding around without a bicycle helmet, really.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, perhaps if they didn't if they didn't charge for the updates, you know, after a year or so, I might get one. I don't know. But
well, they got to make a living somehow. And I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier to pay. I think McAfee Clinic, which is the one I personally use, but I'm not saying it's any better than Norton. It's just the one I happen to use. It's $19 a year or $29 a year. I'd rather pay $29 a year than lose all the data that I've built up over many years and possibly have to reformat my hard disk and reinstall Windows and start all over again.
Well, you know, if you can afford it, you know, that's a good thing if you can afford it. But
well, yes, that's a fair comment, but can you afford not to? I guess that's the question in this day and age when there's so many nasty viruses around.
Well, I don't know whether you can or not, but I guess I might have to get one sometime. I mean, I don't know, maybe a holiday or something like that to get one. But right now, I'm real careful about opening attachments unless it looks or sounds all right. You know, if I get one that I actually received it, the Pretty Park virus one time, but I didn't open it because I thought, man, that looks weird. It just had /cool/prog/prettypark.x, and it was from a cousin of mine, and I thought, man, that's weird. And I asked him if he sent it. You know, I asked him if he sent it, and he said somebody sent it to him, and he opened it, and it spread itself. So I didn't open it because I thought it was weird.
Yeah, one just has to be so careful. Have you got a birthday coming up?
No, my birthday has already passed. Oh. It was in February.
Oh, well, I was hoping somebody might have, from the ACB Radio family, might have bought you McAfee for your birthday or something. Radio thought.
Well, I had a good birthday, though, but I don't know. I might I may get one sometime. I don't know. But, you know, like I said, I'm real careful about attachments. You know, if it's one that I wasn't really expecting, you know, I'm open it.
Mm. You trust Uncle Jonathan. It's really important. The virus check is it's really, 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 really critical. I've just I tell you an experience against myself just to prove this point. I actually had virus checkers on most of the computers on our network, but we have one machine, although it's connected to the network, which of course is connected to the internet, I don't do any internet related things on it. Because I didn't have a virus checker on that machine, it actually spread and infected that machine and did some pretty horrible damage. And it made me realize that no matter how careful you are, no machine can really afford to be without a virus checker, and I was very angry with myself when I got this virus. And I didn't actually know, you know, the computer was acting very, very strangely, and I didn't know I had a virus until as a last resort, after having changed network cards and bits of other hardware and wasted a lot of time. It wasn't until in desperation I installed a virus checker and ran it that I found out that was my problem all along and that I did have a virus on the machine.
Oh, dear. You think that was probably what made it not detect a mouse?
Well,
I don't
know that for certain, because it could be caused by a simple interrupt problem. You know, if you've got a lot of things looking for interrupts inside your PC, it could be something as simple as that. I have seen machines that have not detected the mouse for, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but you know, it's just worth, you know, there's a really nasty virus going around at the moment that deletes all sorts of Windows DLL files. This is the famous Naked Wife virus, and it deletes lots of Windows DLL files and basically makes your whole system useless. So one can't be too careful.
Yeah, I guess not.
Hmm.
Huh. Well,
anyway,
I guess I better Yeah, I better let you go and catch any other last-minute calls that might be waiting out there. And it was it's good to talk to you.
You too, and take care of that computer of yours.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. ACB Radio Mainstream. I wonder if they give me commission for that, but gee whiz. Hello, area code 615.
Hello there, Jonathan.
Hey, man, it must be Michael.
Yep.
Hey.
I heard my name a little earlier, and I had to come and bug you again.
Good on you. What's your criticism this week?
Well, you were talking about your hotel magnate.
Yes.
And you had it right the first time. A hotel.
No, it is not. No, that, if you think that's right, then that's another difference between American and proper British grammar. It's an hotel, most definitely. And if it's not an hotel in America, then that's another difference. Just like
an H is a consonant.
Just like an historical moment, or that's another one. You don't say a historic day, you say an historic day.
I disagree. H
well,
is
you
a
may
consonant.
Disagree, but you're wrong.
No.
Yes, you
H
are.
H is a consonant, and therefore the proper article.
I'm not even going to argue with you about this, Michael, because I know what I'm talking about and you don't. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we're just about at the end of the show, which is just as well, really, because I get somewhat ticked off with people telling me that I don't know my grammar when I do. So, with that said, I'm going now. I hope that you have a very exciting day. And we'll be back next week with more Blind Line, and we'll see what grammatical criticisms we can deal with next week. Well, I think they're coming to take me away. Goodbye.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha-ha. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. A happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs.